Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, somebody switched my music on me. That's not my intro, at least not anymore. Anyway, this is Dan Aronson, and welcome to another Press One for Democracy. We have what I think is a pretty interesting topic for this evening, but I am really, really, really going to need your help because I have been scratching my head for weeks now with all the different things that are going on in Washington, D.C., and trying to figure out exactly where the president is on a lot of these things and where his head's at. And we're going to talk about a couple of them in specific tonight. But again, what I'm really looking for is for folks to call in. This is a call-in show, as I always say. Nobody wants to hear me yap for 90 minutes. So please call in, and when you do, press 1 on your phone to get into the caller queue. It will raise your electronic hand on my board and let me know that you're ready to talk, and we can get you on the air and get you in the conversation. So if you read the blog post or got one of my emails, you know that tonight's show is prefaced by this particular comment, right? And it's tonight's show is entitled GeoPotus. So if that was a little confusing to you, I was trying to blend it. GOP, as in the Grand Old Party, as in the Republicans, with POTUS, and it was question mark, right? So it was GeoPotus. Has the president crossed over to the other side of the aisle? Between his impending nomination of Larry Summers as Fed chairman versus Janet Yellen, a much more obvious progressive's choice, and what we know about the Trans-Pacific Partnership, a new trade agreement being negotiated by President's team, and 600 representatives from megacorps in total secrecy, POTUS seems to be abandoning those who elected him. We've seen, and to some extent have become used to this behavior from Congress, but not from the sanctity of the White House. Tonight on Press One for Democracy, I will be asking callers to help me make sense of the president's seemingly new direction and what, if anything, POTUS might have up his sleeve. So that is the basic premise of the show, the number to call in and let me know exactly what President Obama is thinking. It is 646-929-2495. And again, once you get into the queue, or once the nice British lady comes on and tells you you're welcome to Blog Talk Radio, you then press 1, and that's how you get into the caller queue so that I know you're ready to tell me all about the president's plans and what he's got in store for us over the next 3 years. However, you have to admit one thing, and that is this. The two things that I asked specifically about two things, right? The Trans-Pacific Partnership and about what seems to be his impending nomination. And, of course, we won't know for sure until he actually makes the nomination. And, maybe he's just sandbagging the whole thing and I've got it all wrong. But his nomination of Larry Summers for Fed chair over that of Janet Yellen, Larry Summers is an old supply side guy. That's the old trickle down stuff. Janet Yellen is all about monetary policy based on our levels of employment. So I don't know. It seems like one is a more obvious choice to me at least for this particular president to make. But we will see what we'll see. I have an early caller. It looks like Mr. Rodrigo wants to weigh in. I'm going to bring you in here, Bob, just in case you have some exciting and pressing matters to take care of, and you've got to get your voice in now.
Oh, no. I was just chiming in because I intend to participate extensively this evening. I like
the goody.
There's lots
goody.
Of things to talk about.
So let's start by this. Okay, so appreciate it. Don't mean to cut you off, but let's start with this. All right, so for callers, we'll kind of have a cadence tonight. And okay, the first thing I want you to do is call in and tell me A, if you are a, if you, what you self-identify as from a party standpoint, whether you're a Republican, a Democrat, or an independent, and then tell me, did you or did you not vote for the president? So that kind of, I think, will set the stage for a lot of the comments, and tell us you know, just again shining some light on maybe a little, give us a little insight into the comments. So what is your affiliation, if any, sir?
If I was to label myself, you know how much I like that. If I was to label myself, I would say I was a progressive libertarian. More recently, definitely an independent from a Democratic side over the history, I would say, would be accurate. I can say that I have not really been happy with most of the Republicans, and it only has become most of the Democrats in probably the last decade. As far as voting, I did not vote this last election because I didn't believe I had a choice. I didn't believe that I was represented in the choices that I had, unless I wanted to throw my vote at possibly Rocky Anderson, which might have been the closest to me out of any of the candidates that were listed. But I knew that wasn't a serious possibility, so I did not. I basically did a protest of not voting, which is something that I've been discussing a lot lately, and you have as well, when we talk about how many people that were registered eligible voters in this country that did not. The actual total is greater than either side had in votes to win the election.
Far greater. Somewhere between 15 and 20 million more people didn't vote than voted for the president.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I'm not so mad about that, because I think what it's done is it's clearly now identified a specific block that's fed up with both sides. Normally I would say boo on you, but in this particular case, I'm going to say good on you, as they say in Australia.
I think that it is an obvious situation. I mean, considering how large it is, yes, 100 plus million people voted, but considering how large the block is that didn't, it is significant, considering the trouble that we're in and what we just came out of, or actually we're not even out of it, where we are today economically, day-to-day in our lives, and with all these things that are going on, all these constitutional arguments, at least, even if I was to give that they're not all constitutional violations, there's certainly constitutional debates about some of the things that are going on in our society. I think they're all violations for the most part, but to putting that aside and allowing for a discussion about it, there is so much going on in our country, and we're adding to it on a daily basis. You know, of course, we're all now seeing that Syria is coming aboard, but I don't want to drift off to what you want to get out at the beginning of the show, so those are the first two answers that you have for me.
Okay. And as far as how do you think the president has done as far as keeping up with his campaign promises and the platform he ran on?
Well, since I read your subject matter for the show, I think I saw it a couple hours ago, and I've been kind of churning it around a little bit. What I've come up with so far is, in my view, and a lot of this has to do with stuff I've said before, but in my view, if you really think about it, can you please tell me when the last president from the Democratic side, let's just say, that we might have had, and of course, well, we've only had Carter, Clinton, and Barack, really the only one that truly was a progressive was Jimmy, if you think about it. Because you could list a long line of parallels that Barack Obama and Bill Clinton did that you could consider, quote unquote, to the right or middle ground or whatever you want to say with those labels. And again, to me, it's not a labeling thing. To me, it's all about money. But just putting all of that aside and staying on point for what you want, if you look at it, you have, like you brought up the TPP. Well, of course, Slick Willie was all about NAFTA.
Right.
So, and he also, repealed Glass-Steagall. how is that? How are either one of those things progressive? Let's say.
Well, that's now, what I, yes, and let us as the president would say, let us be clear. That is one of the Petula scratchers. I'm going to read Robert Reich's comments here, but one of the things that Robert Reich points out is that Larry Summers, who looks to be the shoo-in, at least as the president's nominee for the chairman of the Fed, was whispering in Clinton's ear to repeal Glass-Steagall.
Well, a number of people were. I mean, if you look at the discussions that Bill Moyers had about the subject, he did a very good piece about it, and he had I have to look it up. The gentleman who was on his show that was involved in that as well, and he regrets his involvement of it and the results of what happened when Glass-Steagall was repealed, and it'll come to me who he is. But a lot of guys were whispering in his ear, and a lot of people were in the White House. And who was the gentleman? It wasn't Grant. Was it the senator from Texas, I think, maybe, who Clinton handed the pen to that he signed the order repealing, or the law repealing Glass-Steagall? You know, so you have that whole. It amazes me, actually, that the Republicans, you want to talk about labels, hate Hillary Clinton so much, considering how much Willie was in bed with the Republicans, if you want to talk about the paradigm. But again, I don't even like that. I don't even like the discussion. I like the fact that it really points out to us having a two-party duopoly that doesn't want to let anybody else play, and they're doing whatever the hell they want, and it really is not a two sides to the story most of the time.
That's something I think that became very clear in the debates when you were getting a lot of the analysis, that there were people, there were times they were saying, wait a second, President Obama's answer was farther to the right than Romney's answer. I mean, if all you have is right and righter, that's a little bit scary of a choice. And that's,
I could accept any of it if they would take the money out of it. You know, there was some, you know, and I'm not trying not to drift. It's like I didn't talk to you about Summers or anything yet because you didn't ask, trying to stay within the way you want to structure the show. But as far as, like, Summers and Yellen, I was reading something about what Ron Paul was saying, you know, and he's a big end of Fed guy, and I'm not a big end of Fed guy, but I'm definitely of that mindset, you know, let's stop making more money. You know, and his, I kind of agree with what he said. It's like, why are we having a discussion about two sides of the same coin? Now, I get some of the differences that they're pointing out between Yellen and Summers, but it's really all about the Fed anyway. You know, and it just seems to be, you know, we're all on board, let's go along. It goes right to the Syria thing. You know, somebody was telling me today, oh, this president's getting ready to do this, and you think he'll do what Bush did and go get permission from Congress. I said, why does he have to? Congress has been the one who's been screaming about this for 3 months. You know, so everybody's on board. Republicans,
exactly.
Whatever they are, they're all on board. You know, so where's the argument for the other side? I almost talk about, you know, I kind of agree with Marr when he says, who's representing me? When he picks, for example, the atheist side. And it doesn't matter if you are or not. But he's like, where's my representation? And he's right. And the more you look at what's going on every single day, there really is not an argument going on in Washington that is about two clear sides to a situation trying to create a solution to a problem. Everybody's pretty much going the same way, or they're just pushing it aside. They talk about.
I hear you. So hang with me just for a second here. I'm gonna little scratchy on your phone. I think it's your phone, not mine. But so I'm just gonna mute you here for a second. But in 641, I see you in the queue with your hand up. Give me 1 second, and I will get right to you. But I want to read first this was a Facebook post that Robert Reich wrote about the Yellen Summers upcoming. And who is going to be nominated. And so let me just read this to you here. He said, word in Washington is President Obama will nominate either Janet Yellen or Larry Summers to be the next Fed chief. It's not quite as important a decision as a Supreme Court nomination, but it's a very big one. The chairman of the Federal Reserve Board is the single most important economic player in the United States. So who would be best, Yellen or Summers? I know both fairly well. Janet Yellen has impeccable credentials. She's now vice chairman of the Fed after having been head of the San Francisco branch of the Fed, and before that, an economic professor at Berkeley. In 2007, she was one of the very few voices sounding the alarm about subprime mortgage crisis. Not incidentally, she's also a delightful person. Those who have worked with her tell me she listens carefully to all views and is respectful of her employees. If selected, she'd be the first woman to head the Fed. I worked with Larry Summers in the Clinton administration, where he eventually became Treasury Secretary. Under Obama, he ran the National Economic Council. Personally, I like Larry. He's a very bright guy and able to see the nub of most policy problems very quickly. But he has the tact and personality of a bull in a china shop, and he's been notoriously wrong about a few big things. In the late 1990s, he urged Clinton to sign off on legislation killing off Glass-Steagall, and was also part of the Reuben Greenspan cabal that rejected arguments of Brooks Giborn, the chairman of the Commodities Futures Trading Commission, for why the CFTC should regulate financial derivatives. Summers' subsequent tenure as president of Harvard came to an end after he suggested one reason women were not well represented in the sciences is they don't have the mind for it. As chairman of the National Economic Council under Obama, he had Tim Geithner, then Treasury Secretary. He and Tim Geithner, then Treasury Secretary, bailed out Wall Street while refusing to impose tough conditions on the banks. So if you were the president, who would you nominate? So Robert Reich being all very nicey-nice, as he usually is, but getting his point across there, I think. The three things here to cut through it on Summers, the three knocks against Summers Reich had were killing off Glass-Steagall, rejecting regulation of financial derivatives, right? And we'll throw in the insulting women just for fun. As I tried to set up the show, that to me, I'm bringing you back in here for a second, Bobby. To me, that's sounds more like Republican thinking than Democratic thinking.
Well, sure, okay. Let's say yes to that. Of course, I mean, I see the obvious points, but isn't really the point, if we're going to look at Summers, let's put the right-left thing aside for a second and just look at some of the things that you mentioned. Glass-Steagall was wrong to repeal. I don't care what anybody wants to argue about that. The people who say we should have less regulations and whatever they want to say, the protection was necessary, and it was a direct result of the Depression, the reaction to the Depression to protect that from ever happening again. They repeal it, it becomes a major factor in the playing as to why it happened. So whether it's right or left, it was wrong. It was a bad decision. Same thing with the derivative aspect of it. Bad decision. Now, understanding that the regulation aspect of the arguments from the ideological standpoint, don't care, it is wrong. I just from a standpoint of what was the result of the action. Then you add the fact that the man is obviously a sexist, and you've heard me say I believe that our world is more sexist than racist. Then he's a sexist Neanderthal. Why is he even working in the Obama administration? Let's start there.
Well,
to even have him working, when you were talking about this, this is one of the things that bugged me about the president, and I've mentioned this before when it came to Daschle. He was all about change, and we've heard this thing before, and of course, you kind of got sold on it because, first of all, he's going to be the first black president. Talk about change. We got it right there. Bingo. Sign me up. Now, you walk into the rest of the change, and as I mentioned before, he brings in Tom Daschle for a cabinet post. There's no change there. The man is all about money. He's coming back from K Street. So now he brings in Summers.
Yeah.
There's no change. Now we're talking about the important position he put, the most important economic position around, and we're going to put him there or consider him there or whatever on the basis of the decisions that he's made.
Yeah, and I'm going to miss it. I think I'm going to get this number right. Isn't that a 14-year appointment, Fed Chair?
Yes, I believe it is 14.
It's not something that the next guy could just come in and just go, nah, you know what, I don't like you. This is a 14-year appointment. So hang on a second, Bobby. I'm going to bring in 641. Your mic is open. Who do I have the pleasure of speaking with?
Hi, it's Bob Woodburn. How are you?
Hey, Bob Woodburn. How are you, man?
Doing okay.
Good to hear your voice. Good to hear your voice. What do you make of POTUS's latest moves?
Well, let's start with the process. First, I'm a centrist. I'm registered no party because there is not an independent party registration allowed in Iowa. And yes, I voted for the president.
Okay, thank you for remembering my own rules. Okay, so given that, thank you for the setup. So what is your take on how the president has been maneuvering, if you will?
Well, my thought's this, okay? The more I see the 22nd Amendment in action, the more I'm convinced it's a colossal, that is to say, epic failure. And the reason it's an epic failure is because the moment there's no incentive for reelection, they do what they want to do. We've seen it with every two-term president since the 22nd Amendment was adopted. In the second term, they do whatever they damn well please, because there is no check other than impeachment, and we've only seen one Congress willing to take that step and go and be willing to go all the way through with the math there from the outset. And that was Nixon. And he had committed impeachable offenses, and so he had to resign.
Yeah, I think technically Andrew Johnson was also impeached.
Andrew Johnson, Bill Clinton. Andrew Johnson and Bill Clinton were impeached. Articles of impeachment were drafted against Nixon. And I believe he resigned before they actually started impeachment, or before the House had passed the articles of impeachment.
That's correct.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah.
So here's my question, Bob. Here's my question. And 773, I see you've jumped into the caller queue, so we'll be getting to you right away next. But here's my question, Bob. So, yeah, I get that they have a lot more free rein to do what it is they want to do, right? I mean, we all remember the embarrassing moment near the end of his first term when he was with the Russian ambassador and his mic was still open. And remember, he ends up whispering to the guy, tell him I'll have more leeway after I get reelected. So,
yeah.
But here's the thing. So don't you hope, though, that when they do go crazy, if they do go a little crazy, at least they go towards the all the things that they promised and towards what their actual planks were in their platform instead of going the other way? Because that seems like a humongous betrayal of voters.
I see it as a wash on the whole of the two terms, okay? I am incredibly grateful for what the right derisively calls and what I proudly call Obamacare.
Thank you. I won't use that term. I always call it the AHCA, but that's fine. I'm with you.
Yeah,
I know the president is trying to co-opt it, but I still don't like it. But go ahead. Sorry.
All right. I love Obamacare. Anybody who is disabled, that is his homage to both the disabled and the elderly. That's his tribute to Lyndon Johnson, basically.
Yeah.
Right?
And by the way, on the thread today on the Facebook page, when I in response to somebody saying a couple of things, I said that's why I got so excited because the Affordable Health Care Act was the most progressive piece of legislation since Kennedy's War on Poverty. I mean, you didn't see it out of Clinton, you didn't see out of Carter. It was you have to go all the way back to Kennedy before you can find a president that did something that progressive. And that's
and
was
yet
exciting.
And yet it was an act that was created
by
the
Heritage
Foundation.
And Johnson got it through. Johnson got it through Congress.
Yeah.
That's the great part.
Yeah. So here he gets off this wonderful start. Then he gets reelected. And then what?
Well, then he gets reelected, and we get to – we're in the middle of a fight over women's rights. Now, my thought, this is all a setup so that Hillary can gather women into the camp and go forward, okay? I get that the Republicans are trying to cut their own throat. The problem is – I've run the numbers. I don't see how Hillary Clinton's going to pull more than 255 electoral votes, no matter what she does, no matter who her vice president is.
Okay. No, I hear you. By the way, if you're a Democrat and you're out there listening, I had the distinct pleasure of spending lunch with Debbie Lynn Molyneux last Friday, listening to Ron Wyden, the senator from Oregon.
Marvelous.
Democrats, you got to draft this guy. He is phenomenal.
Marvelous.
We would do very well with this man in the White House. I'm just saying. So
He's one of the ten. I tell everybody to give me 10 people in Washington that are working for the people. I don't have 10 yet, but he's on the list.
Well, I can tell you there's three from Oregon alone that I know of. Yeah, our other seven, they're Merkley.
All three of them are on my list, and I still don't have 10.
All right, well, we'll get there. Hang on. Bob, I got the queue is really filling up tonight. We've got a great –
Can I make one last point, and then I'm out of your hair?
Sure, you go. Then I'm coming right to 773, then 513, and 724, in that order.
Deal. As far as him moving to the right, that's kind of expected given that it's put up or shut up time as far as his legacy goes, and he's got a very recalcitrant Congress that is trying to ruin his legacy. He's reaching out, and it's out of necessity to his memory. And I can't blame him for that, given that he doesn't have any incentive through the ballot box to try for a third term. That's all I needed.
All right, Bob. I really appreciate it, Bob.
I got a comment on that, Dan. Just briefly.
Well, hang on. Me first. Me first. It's my show, right?
That's true.
And this is all I'm saying, Bob. I'd rather see him go the other way. I would rather see him throw a veto at Congress and then scream and shout and say, you guys have to work with me or I'm going to shut you down. I'd rather see him go that way than to see him become just a bag man for the Republican Party and their initiatives. I'd rather see him just let him gum up the works for a second. Let's see what Congress thinks. All right, Bobby, what do you get?
I would like to echo the leadership aspect of what you're saying. I believe that he was inexperienced when it came to what he really had to deal with to some degree. But I'll say this. I could care less about anybody's legacy. They're supposed to be there to work for us. I don't care
if we're
getting reelected. I don't care what the situation is. I don't give them a pass. I don't give anybody a pass for what they've been doing to us lately.
All right. All right. Thanks, Bobby. 513, I'm opening your mic. Who do I have the pleasure of speaking with?
This is Laura.
Hi, Laura. How are you? We've missed you.
I'm confused.
Uh-oh, you're confused. I guess that's not. I guess there could be worse statuses to have. What are you confused about, ma'am?
What in the world are you guys talking about with Obamacare and the disabled and the elderly?
Well, that was Bob. So let me open Bob's mic up because I don't want to speak for Bob. So, Bob, Bob, did you leave me, or is that you at 773? Never mind. I'm sorry. Bob has left the building, so I can't speak for Bob. So I'm sorry, but apparently you disagreed. So Bob, if you're out there and you can call back in, I guess maybe we can have a discussion about it. But why don't you go ahead and say your piece about how you obviously don't think it is a legacy or a great thing for disabled people?
Well, as far as I know, Obamacare doesn't affect that at all.
I really can't speak to it. I'm sorry. Bobby? Any idea?
Well, I have read the law, and I can't sit here and point out the stable part about it. I think that I don't think it hurts it from the way the law is. But I think actually Laura's probably right. Hi, Laura, by the way. I think she's probably right in that it doesn't affect it negatively or positively. It kind of keeps the status quo.
Well, so the one thing I can think of is there's no more lifetime caps anymore, right?
That
is the one way I think, Laura, that people who are disabled and who have regularly high medical bills eventually would bump up into a ceiling where their lifetime payouts would be capped, and that's the one place that I can see where that would be positive for handicap and elderly.
I didn't know there was a lifetime cap on Medicare.
No, I'm talking about private insurance.
Oh.
On every private health insurance plan I've ever seen, there's a lifetime cap.
Oh, I was assuming that when you said disabled, that you meant disabled according to disability for Social Security purposes.
Yeah. Well, again, I'm sorry. I'm not the one who said it. It was Bob Woodward. So, you know, maybe if Bob calls back in, we can have him explain. But I apologize. Any comment on the subject of the evening? Is the president drifting away from us?
Well, you know me, Dan. I was a little confused about what your email said. I figured you were trying to pique people's curiosity. What did G-O-P-O-T-U-S mean?
So it's G-O-P-O-T-U-S. It was supposed to be a merging together of the G-O-P and the word POTUS, right? President of the United States. So I was trying to be clever, and I was asking if you thought that Obama was getting too Republican in his thinking and in some of his actions.
Bill Clinton did, but because of that, I guess I didn't pay as much attention to Obama and what he's done because I just gotten to the point where I've become, I guess, a little cynical, and I don't know where the joke begins and the joke ends anymore, you know? Because everything's a Mexican standoff. It's kind of like, you know, if you're going to say no to mine, then I'll say no to yours. So now you have to say yes to mine whether you want it or not. Because, if you don't, then I'll say no to all of yours.
Yeah, but that kind of haggling has gone on forever in our government. I mean, that's the art of compromise. I mean, politics, right, is the art of compromise. And it's you give a little here, I'll give a little here, and eventually we'll work to the middle, right? I don't want to oversimplify it, but I remember the first trip I ever took to Mexico, and they put us in this room, and I was with Apple Vacations, and they taught us how to barter because I had no idea. And they said, well, here's what you do. You go in, he's going to tell you one price, you go half, and then you work to the middle. So you end up at about three-quarters of what they ask. And I said, oh, okay, I can do that. And, but, I mean, that's what it's supposed to be. But right now it's like I'm standing on this side of the room. It's a seventh-grade dance, right? All the boys are lined up on one side of the room and all the girls are lined up on the other side of the room and nobody's moving. Nobody's doing the dance.
There's real compromise where you meet in the middle, and there's dirty compromise where you scratch my back and I'll scratch your back. Well, you'll do something that's wrong for me, and I'll do something that's not right for you. You know what I mean, Dan?
I absolutely agree. You're absolutely right in that. I've been watching this series. I don't know if you've watched it. There's an HBO series called Veep. And, boy, if it is a true description of what Washington's like, oh, my word.
I'll give you $1 million so that your cousin David – and get a special scholarship to finish his theses on you know, why the amoeba growing this way in this special river, whatever the deal is, if you'll, you know, if
no,
you'll
no,
help.
I hear you. I know what you're saying. Now you're talking earmarks. And that was actually something that that's something the president ran on. He talked about transparency and earmarks, and he got about halfway there. He got a compromise from PolitiFact on that one. So,
there are bigger things. I mean, that's a petty thing. Those things are usually petty, penny-any compared to bigger things, like, you know, the bridge across the Ohio River versus, you know, some bridge in Alaska that two cars ride over once a year, you know, that sort of thing.
I hear you. Perfect.
You know, Dan.
Anything
you
else?
Know, Dan. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was just going to say, Laura, if, I asked Laura if she had anything else because I got to get to 724, who's been patiently holding.
Go on. I'm listening, Dan.
Okay. Hey, Laura, always great to hear from you. I've been a little worried about you. You're everything good?
Oh, yeah, I've gone through a lot of stress with Medicaid. By the way, Medicaid, if you're disabled and you're working, it's 150% of the poverty line. But if you're disabled and not working, it's 64% of the poverty line.
So it almost pays not to be working.
Well, no. If you're not working, anything you make over 64% of the poverty line, you have to pay towards your medical expenses or pay
them.
You
have to pay. Okay, I thought you were talking about what your benefits were. Okay.
No, you can't have more than 64% of the poverty line in income.
Right,
and get
got it.
Medical care. Yeah.
Okay. All right. I appreciate that, Laura. Thank you very much. Bobby, you had a comment before I opened 724's mic?
Well, you know, it seems to me as I sit here and I think more about what the basis of the show is that it actually really opens up the discussion on how Congress and the executive and even the courts, again, we've had this discussion before, are working in concert. I don't know what the ideology is other than that it's money. You know, you can have a list, you can take a laundry list of some of the things that has happened, either quietly or loudly, that they've done together. That either attack us individually on our constitutional rights or that benefit Congress. Just recently, you just had them exempting themselves from the Affordable Care Act, which is in the law that Congress will have to go to their individual state exchanges. So where's the partisanship there? What ideology are we talking about when they're working in concert together to create a solution that benefits only them exclusively, and the president signs off on it? I don't know what ideology it is other than money.
The same thing happened at the end of last year when they voided the transparency clause in the Stock
Insider
Act, which allowed them to trade on insider information, but not to disclose the details. And which makes it a lot easier, obviously, to do it. And it took 10 seconds in the Senate and 14 seconds in the House on voice votes for them to just go right through and just bulldoze it.
And the president signed it. So what ideology is that? As you say, I mean, do you say it's to the right or to the left, or is it just criminal or whatever?
I don't know. Let's see what 724 has to say. 724, I'm opening your mic. Who are we speaking with?
Hi, Dan. It's Greg in Pittsburgh.
Hey, Greg.
Hey, Greg.
How you guys doing? Hey, Bob.
Good, man. How are you?
Good.
Thank you for depressing me with your comments in the chat where you said 57% of eligible voters voted in 2012.
You should take heart, Dan. Those numbers are as high as they've been in 20 years. Or 30,
yeah, like I said. Thanks for depressing
years.
Me.
Just
man.
You have to manage your own emotions. I'm sorry.
Yeah, there ought to be a way. You know what? We really do have to find a way to scientifically, though. It's like there should be like a switch, like a little dip switch setting in each person. And if you vote, then you get to, if you turn it on, and that's the I'm going to bitch about my government vote. or the government button. And if you don't vote, you don't get to, because I'm sure there's a lot more than 57% of the people who are walking around with political opinions.
Well, 92 million or whatever the number is. I'm sure there's a couple of two or three that probably express their opinions on a regular basis and but don't go into the voting booth to do anything about it. So,
Bobby's upset. Bobby's upset. He's going to get on his third-party independent bandwagon here in a second, and it's okay. I'm gonna let him. But hold on. So to start out, Greg, I don't know if you caught the beginning of the show, but do you identify as a Democrat, Republican, or a independent?
I'm registered, non-affiliated.
Okay, that's not what I asked you. If somebody asked you today, are you a Democrat, or Republican, or independent? What would you tell?
If I had to pick between those three, I probably would pick Democrat.
Okay. I don't mean to say that. If you're a Libertarian, if you're a Constitution Party,
please
feel free.
Yeah. I'm left of most everybody that has any sort of pulpit or megaphone these days, including the president. The answer to your question about has he gone to the other side, I think the answer to that question is no. I think the aisle has moved to the right, to the degree that, to borrow a line from Bill Maher, the Democrats have become Republicans and the Republicans have become the party of the crazy. And I don't make any apologies for saying it. You know, all you have to do is take one look at who their spokespeople are, look at who they put up as presidential candidates last year, and if the best you can come up with is Mitt Romney and the gang of wackos, well, yeah, you know what? The president actually doesn't have to be a real Democrat to take the to be on the opposite side of most issues with the Republican Party today. I think, frankly, he's losing a golden opportunity to actually really have an impact, to really do something of historical importance on so many things that it's just – it's sad. I voted for him twice, and I will say that. There are only two choices in this country, and like it or not, that's kind of the way the system is set up. And it is all about money. It has certainly corrupted the entire system and everybody in it. I guess if I had to answer the question – is Obama a Republican? He would have been 25 or 30 years ago, based on his policies and a lot of positions that he has today.
Okay.
Let me ask a question, if you don't mind. I want to both of you, or to everybody who's still. I think Laura's still with us too. Let me ask you this: When I'm going to give a couple of examples. Let me go through them, and then you'll see where I'm going. It's same thing like what I just asked a little while ago when it came to, like we were talking about the insider trading aspect of it and, you know, what ideology is this. And the 2000, you know about the NDAA, the 2011-2012 NDAA, there was a clause that's put in it. This is an act that's been going on for 35 years or more. It's a standard thing that goes on every year, the National Defense Authorization Act. It basically is the act that is signed into law every New Year's Day or New Year's Eve. That raises the cost of living, gives the cost of living raise to the military established across the board. So in 2011 and in 2012, Congress put in the NDAA, and of course we have a right Congress and a left Congress, but Congress put in a clause in the NDAA that allows for the indefinite detention of American citizens, eliminates probable cause for the arrest, and eliminates due process in the incarceration. So the president signed it twice. He said the first time he would never use it, but he signed it into law twice. Now, we have a right House and a left Senate that enacted it, and we have a president that signed it. In my view, it is clearly unconstitutional. Can you tell me what ideology that is?
Republican.
Because, again, how? How is that a Republican ideology? But when I guess let me ask you this way. Are you saying then that this type of constitutional violation only happens on the Republican side of the aisle, but yet the Democratic House passed it?
I mean,
no, it's a Republican ideology. You ask me what ideology is, it's a Republican ideology.
Right. So how do you that's what I'm asking you now. So my second part is, so are you saying then that the Republicans have the ideology of violating the Constitution and the Democrats just went along with it?
Oh, hold on. Wait. Stop.
He just asked the question,
man. Flag on the play. All right. So, first of all, he didn't say that it was a Republican.
I get to answer the question, don't I?
No. I don't like the question. We're going to have him rephrase it, because the way he phrased it was like, oh, it's a Republican ideology to write on constitutional laws, and I didn't like that leap.
No.
Okay. He asked the question. I was the one who called it a Republican ideology.
He's the one who called it Republican ideology, not me.
But here's the thing. It's a hawkish ideology, and there are hawks on both sides of the aisle.
Oh, Dan.
On the Republican side, I agree. Hawks are hawks. There's plenty of people that are all about.
If we're talking about ideology, there are far, far fewer hawks who would consider themselves to be Democrats and be in a Democratic Party.
Not arguing with you, Greg. Sorry, go ahead and answer the question.
Okay, so you have 535.
Wait. You asked the question. Hold on. I'm going to let Greg answer. Let's let Greg answer.
Okay, I forgot the question. What's the question?
I said, so you're saying, so the follow-up to the question, you're saying that it is a, if I'm getting this right, on this, just we'll just talk about just this particular issue. It's a Republican ideology to essentially violate three amendments of the Constitution, and it's a Democratic what? Two branches of the action were Democratic, and it's them. What do they do? They're just following it.
It's a Democratic ideology to cave. Okay, Democrats are experts. They've proven it through history, for the most part, with very few exceptions, to be masters at negotiating with themselves and then caving in to pressure from the right, especially in the last two decades, to do whatever it is that the Republicans say is patriotic, is the right thing to do, is the thing that will help business and trickle down to the rest of us. The Democrats are pussies.
Sorry.
They're sissies.
It was never
an adult show, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes.
There was never a heavy debate about this particular aspect. There was never that kind of a debate. The thing was done. It was one of those situations. And mind you, as you know, we're just having a banter here. I'm not necessarily disagreeing with you or agreeing with you. I'm just saying, you know, just pointing out where we are going here as far as ideology or where the line is or what's moving. Because I don't believe there is an aisle shift. I just think that there really is no aisle. I think that in Washington, they hang out together after hours on K Street. I think that a lot of this is a game that they're playing with us to keep us divided, et cetera. Now, mind you, I certainly agree that there are real issues that there is division on, absolutely. I mean, especially on the social side. But when it comes to the real thing, there certainly seems to be no ideology. Dan gave the example of the insider trading thing that we all talked about before on the show and other shows, where they did that. I mean, there was no argument. They just went right down. They just went right along with it because you know what? It protects their pocketbook. So I'm not sure if there really is somebody moving to the right or the left, as there is everybody moving towards the money. I guess I don't disagree
with that at all. Actually, I think that's an excellent way to frame that. I still do believe though there are certain things that ideologically the two parties themselves are worlds apart. And I would, again, my own perspective, and speaking in very broad, very general terms, admittedly, that there is the wacko right side of things, and there is the cave-in left side of the equation that doesn't fight hard enough, that doesn't stand up tall enough, that doesn't say, you're nuts.
That's a great point. Hold on a second, because I do have 773 who does want to jump in, so I want to get them on. But I mean, that's exactly my point tonight, Greg. Is why isn't the president standing firmer against this stuff? And I hear Bobby's frustration in it as well. Why isn't he vetoing some of these things? Why isn't he telling them, heck no, No, that's never going to fly, not on my watch, go back and rewrite it. Why isn't he doing that? Why has he become the cave guy? I don't understand. I just don't understand. It's very frustrating. 773, you're opening your microphone. Who do we have the pleasure of speaking with?
Maybe that's me.
That
Hello?
Is you.
Oh,
Hello?
Okay. I'm Betty from Chicago.
Hi, Betty from Chicago. Are you a first-time caller to our show?
Yes, I am.
Welcome.
Thank you.
I'm an old Chicago guy myself. I grew up in Highland Park.
Awesome. I guess you could label me as a somewhat progressive Democrat, although my kids would probably tell you I'm socialist, but I label myself as a progressive Democrat. And, yeah, I voted for Obama both elections, and I am getting very, very disappointed in what's been going on. I understand that he has a very recalcitrant, obnoxious Congress to work with. I mean, any senator that says, my sole job is to make sure he's a one-term president, that tells you everything you need to know.
Oh, did that chap my hide when he said that? I was like, no,
yeah.
That's not your job. Your job is to pass laws that benefit the people that put you there. That was so frustrating when he said that.
Very.
Right.
But what I wanted to talk about was you mentioned in your email about the TPP.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. If you could expound on that a little bit, because the little that I know, it scares the hell out of me. That, along with corporations are people, and honestly, it just scares the hell out of me.
So let me give you. I'll give you a couple. Couple things on the TPP. First of all, the fact that we all know very little about it is exactly what was intended, because it's being negotiated in total secrecy to the public. There are members of Congress who can't even get access to it. The only people that have access to the negotiations are 600 representatives from mega corporations. I found a list out there. I'll publish it when I find it again, but. I found a list. You can actually see who are the people who are the special negotiators that were brought in from private sector, and they're all from megacorps. They're all from like Goldman Sachs and who's your favorite GMO stuff? But your buddies,
Bobby.
Yeah, Monsanto's in there. You just look at the list of the megacorps that are doing it, and there's 29 chapters to this thing, and some stuff has been quote-unquote leaked, but not one page has been officially published to the public. I mean, that tells you everything you need to know when you talk about corporate personhood. Well, again, it's not – forget 600 people negotiating this thing. It's 600 corporations negotiating this thing. And it is scary, and it is to be feared, and we all have to scream from the tops of our lungs – from the tops of the hills with all of our might that we've got to demand transparency. We've got to demand something, you know. And Senator Wyden talked about this on Friday when I was at the lunch with him. And he said the thing that he fought very hard for against the SOPA, which was the Internet Control Act. And he said the TPP will, in its present form, undo what the defeat of SOPA did, and it will allow megacorporations to totally put a stranglehold on the internet and on content, shut people down. That's just one of the 29 chapters. Yeah, it's horrible. It's a horrible thing.
It gives them protections against solutions to stop it by our society. In other words, corporations, some of the things that have been put in place or not put in place, like SOPA, CISPA, for example, as well, they are not going to have, there's not going to be any authority to stop them from doing what they want to do. That's part of what's being put out there. It's absolutely a scary thing. And it is an extension of the trade agreements that have already happened, which just have not appeared as scary as they should have. And this is just the next step, because the people who benefited most
from like NAFTA are the corporations, certainly not our society. It like allegedly was going to happen when it was sold to us. The corporations are the ones that are making all the money off it, and is benefiting us at all, none at all, in the least. And they're basically expanding that and then letting the corporations go what they want. And Monsanto is a big player in this because they're having problems in other countries, unlike they're not having problems here. So part of their goal is to open up the other markets to them that have already banned them on the basis of this agreement. It's pretty nuts.
So basically, part of it is like I'm getting a feeling they can't be sued for things that
That's
happen.
Correct. Immunity, that is correct. And they're also going to be, an awful part of this is that, and of course, a lot of this is based upon leak stuff. Also part of this is that they're going to be able to bring in workers from other countries. I believe we spoke about that on this show a couple weeks ago, right, Dan, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, absolutely.
They're able to bring from other countries to work here at whatever rate it happens to be. They would not be subjected. There's actually some written information out there that even talks about how they're going to be involved in eminent domain practices, creating communities in the states that are basically states within states that are basically corporate owned. It's pretty amazing. It's very scary. No question about it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's all kinds of I was going to say fun stuff, but not really.
Yeah, I mean, I've been trying to find out about this stuff because really the way I feel lately is that maybe I just want to move to Ireland or Germany or somewhere else because I feel like we don't have enough of a voice and we're not exerting enough pressure on elected officials to stop this stupidity, to make them do something about climate control. I feel like getting up in front of Congress and telling them they're a bunch of moronic idiots if they don't believe that there's climate change.
Well, I think, a good number of them do, and then there's a certain faction that doesn't, you know, that wants to deny the science. I think you make the perfect point right away, which is, you'd like to get up in front of Congress. Yes, you'd like to be able to bend their ear. You'd like to, you know, but good luck going to Washington and even getting a meeting with your own congressman if you don't have a $25,000 check in your pocket.
Yeah, I know. One other thing I'd like to comment on about Obamacare, because I heard some remarks about that. I think it's a great starting point. I'm a retired emergency room nurse from Cook County Hospital. And
oh, God bless you. God bless you for Cook County. Okay, so if people don't know this, the show Chicago Hope was based on Cook County, right? Was it Chicago Hope or ER?
It was.
ER.
Yeah, one of them were. And
ER.
It is. They get the nastiest. It's inner city traffic. It is. You must have seen things that would curl a grown man's toes.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, my word. God bless you for that service.
But Obamacare, socialized medicine, call you what you want. Single-payer health care is what's needed. Nothing is going to be perfect, but a single-payer health care would be the best solution.
Yeah,
because
you've got to at least have the public option.
The insurances, they're just going to keep making money.
I'm leaving my wife and moving to Chicago.
No, Betty, you're so right. And
give me your address.
Wait, there's
but,
two of you
by
talking.
By the way, Betty, when your sons or your grandkids call you socialist, please explain to them that socialism is not a bad thing and that it works in a lot of circumstances, much better than capitalism. And you know what? Health insurance will be one of them.
And you know what? They know not to bring up Walmart in front of me. They tell their friends, do not talk about Walmart in front of my mom because you'll never hear the end of it.
That's my wife is the same way. She rails against them, and it's true. I mean, they've got I forget the percentage of their staff that's their workers that are on assistance. So
probably
in order
for
so,
level. Oh, that's the minimum wage argument.
So we're all everyone, whether you shop there or not, is subsidizing Walmart.
Right,
absolutely.
Because their employees are on government assistance. It's absolutely ludicrous. It's insulting
is.
to them. It's just an insult to think that
and
that's
going. And you know,
going, oh.
I went to a labor thing out at O'Hare. I don't know, maybe 8 years ago about organizing, and Walmart has a video that shows their workers exactly how to do it. It's not even like, oh, just go get on welfare or whatever. They show them. It's disgusting. Like,
oh, totally.
Billionaire
raise,
Walmart people.
Like, wait, you take people off the safety net. It's so ridiculous what's going on with Walmart. 100%.
It is. Totally. And on that note, I'll let you get to someone else.
Oh, Betty, you've been an absolute joy. Please.
I'll give you hope, everybody. We need to have a single-payer system that allows for government bidding on being that single-payer insurance company every 4 or 5 years, so it's still considered free market, and whoever wins, wins, because it's a government contract like everything else. And you've solved two sides of the coin right there. Socialized medicine with a free market aspect to it.
You've solved everything except for the fact that, can you imagine the corruption surrounding that choice?
Oh,
can you imagine the money exchanging hands to get that contract? Oh, my word.
This is on the basis of the fact that I'm going to believe that Thomas Jefferson was right. And I'm going to believe in people.
Good luck with that. Betty, thank you for calling. It was an absolute pleasure speaking to you. We have a new caller in queue. I'm going to bring in 814. 814, whom do we have the pleasure of speaking to?
Hi, this is Dave from Erie, Pennsylvania.
Dave from Erie, Pennsylvania. Are the Selevitches still running the fire department there?
I don't know the name.
I have a sister-in-law whose dad was like the fire marshal there, I guess, for forever. And they're like, they had 11 kids, and like all the boys went into the department. So.
Oh my goodness! Yeah, we got a lot of family dynasties up here. We still have a lot of ethnic clubs, like the Polish Falcons and.
Right.
German clubs and things like that. It's a great little town.
Yeah, I remember it well.
The Trans-Pacific partnership is pretty scary on a lot of fronts. Affects everything from food to financial services.
Oh, it's hugely all-encompassing. Absolutely. Now, before at the beginning of the show, we laid out a little pattern for how we were going to do this. So, the first thing I need to ask you, Dave, is, do you self-identify with either of the two parties, or is any party, or as an independent?
I don't. I unregistered myself about 4 years ago from the Democratic Party.
All right, and then. Then I'm an independent.
I have given money to the Coffee Party, which I guess you've heard of.
Well, I have heard of those guys. They're nice people, I can't imagine a better use of your money, sir.
Yeah.
But did you vote for the president? And you don't have. That's a private matter, so you don't have to say.
No, I did vote for him twice. The reason I voted for him in 2012 was because. I thought if he was elected, we would not go to war with Iran. And I thought if Romney got elected, we'd bomb Iran. So those were pretty low expectations going in. I'm pretty disappointed in Obama. I figured being a constitutional law professor, he'd at least be strong on constitutional rights and come out fighting against the more odious provisions of the DAA and the Patriot Act, but he's caved on his area of expertise. I could cut him a pass, I guess, for not being interested in finance and basically outsourcing all of those decisions to his Treasury Secretary, from the bailout to other regulation of banks and other important financial regulations. But I was really hoping for better things on the constitutional law front. And he just, maybe the guy's exhausted. I don't know what the answer is.
I'm not sure. You're being nicer to him than I am, only because I'm a firm believer that, you know, your word is your bond. That's how I grew up. And if you say you're going to do something, you have to do it. And I do know that he's got an obstinate Congress that can be intractable. However, that doesn't mean you cave. It means you just sit there and go and you just say, well, that's wrong, that's wrong, that's wrong, that's wrong. And, you know, again, every once in a while, why not throw the veto down and say no? I mean,
right.
He could have said no to the NDAA and say, until you take out this indefinite retention for American citizens at Camp Guantanamo Bay, I'm not signing this thing. He said that,
mm-hmm.
You stripped the citizens of habeas corpus. I mean, constitutional things, just like you said. Why not throw the veto down and say, take that out, and I'll sign it? But he didn't.
Right.
And he ran on strengthening unions, and he ran on a lot of these things and getting middle-class people back to work the last election. How many times did we hear that? We're going to do green energy. We're going to promote green energy. We're going to invest in green energy, and we're going to put people to work. You know, then he gives this big speech, and this one kind of really chapped me. He gives this big speech in Detroit right before the election because he knows he has to carry Michigan, right? Big battleground state. So he goes there and he says, "We're back, baby." Well, don't tell Detroit that because they're sending in Chapter 13. So don't tell Detroit we're back because I don't think they'll believe you.
Right.
So if he says it, I just want him to do it. That's all. Or at least try his best. And I just don't see it.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Detroit, my understanding is the United Auto Workers are behind the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Do you guys know anything about that? Somehow they got strong-armed into endorsing it on the assumption that it's going to create jobs.
I did read something about that, but I'm not sure what was going on with it. I was kind of surprised myself. This is Bobby. Because I remember clearly that the majority of the unions were not happy about NAFTA. They had to have their arms twisted to even get anywhere close to that. That was a pretty standing battle. That lasted for a while. NAFTA, there was some debate on it. It just wasn't honest debate.
But with NAFTA, Bobby, it was a little bit different because I can move factories to Mexico and drive the product over the border, right? I mean, building cars has become a fairly localized phenomenon, right? I mean, you don't really build cars and then ship them over to Asia. It's not done anymore, right? All of the Japanese plants, Japanese companies have stuff on our soil, so I'm actually not sure one way or another why the UAW would care about what happens over in the other. I don't know.
Well, the issue was that they were taking jobs, which in fact happened. You see, what the union was arguing back in the NAFTA thing was all about this outsourcing stuff, which is exactly what happened. You know, whenever I think about the outsourcing, I have my niece is married to a wonderful guy, and he works in international banking on Wall Street. And he has been spending half of his time in the Philippines training people to do jobs where they literally can hire 50 people for every two that they would pay in the United States to do the same job. So he has been, this has been going on for about 4 years now. Every time I see him, I'm just like, wow. You know, so and I hate to find out things reading them in the paper because, as we know, I don't trust our local set media. I'm listening to people actually where this is happening to, and that's what the unions had the problem with. It wasn't so much that they didn't care about the factories being over there, but they were outsourcing jobs, taking stuff away that could have been happening here on the basis of that trade agreement. And they ran, and of course, that's exactly what the corporations did. They ran to these other countries, and they can hire all these people. And so the only way to solve it, really, for it's the same thing going back to having an economic problem. The only way to solve this is to raise the pay of the rest of the world in order to make an even playing field for the United States. Which is why one of the reasons I say that we might be left with the only place to get jobs is from infrastructure from our government, which is absurd. Because as much as you ask for private enterprise, from the standpoint of profit, they're always going to go to the slave labor, and because they're allowed to. It isn't like they're doing anything illegal. They're allowed to do that and have their companies run with all this outsourced slave labor money, and we sit here with no jobs as a result of it. So where would we find the job? If everything was fixed and it was fair and there was no taxes, where are we getting the jobs?
So let me compound on that or add to that. One of the things that has been leaked about the TPP that has been fairly acknowledged as it's in is this idea that you are no longer allowed as a government to have prejudicial buying policies. In other words, in America, we have Buy American, right? So let's say that like the city of Portland goes out and we're going to double our – we just added a new light rail line, so we needed to have a bunch of cars made. We can no longer say it's only available to American manufacturers. You can't do that anymore. Now, who's the biggest consumer in the world?
United States.
Well, it used to be the United States. Maybe China's now a bigger consumer. I don't know. But we're either
first
or the second. And all of those set-asides for American companies, gone. Forget it.
Right.
They're gone.
So it's another extension of the same trade agreement problem. You know, it's okay to have a world economic view, but considering the fact that from the standpoint of what people need to make to live on, if you have to spend money to live, you have to be able to make some, obviously. So if you're not allowing them to make enough money to live at above a poverty line, which would allow for the shrinkage of government on the basis of less people on the safety net, then we're just in a tremendous cycle on the basis of profit, again, with the money. And you have all these lobbyists. Just today I read, and I posted it on mine, so you can grab it then, because I'm not on the computer, but there was a talking about how lobbyists, because when they lobby for municipalities and the like, they're actually receiving pensions from the state because they lobby for municipalities, even though they're making money in a lobbying firm privately. Now, is there anything more ludicrous than that you've heard lately?
That's pretty generous of a state to give that when most states, their whole pension systems are bankrupting them.
Thank you. And then, of course, there was another article just today about, that was just released today, talking about, and we all know this is going on in all fronts, but talking about how, on the basis of the ATA, there are so many people being hired for lobbyists who worked on the committees that wrote the law in order to help them do what they need to do within the law, and so that vicious cycle goes on again. I know there was a report in the past from the Finance Committee, you know, just recently showing how many lobbyists from one senator, it was 23 in like the last 3 years, of his own staff that now work on K Street. That's what we have. So they know that's all we have going on. That's all that's going on.
Well, let me make a prediction. This is Dave again. You heard it here on POTUS Radio or wherever we are.
I wish I had that listenership.
Yeah. When President Obama finishes his second term, I'll bet money that he ends up on the board of directors of Goldman Sachs. Speaking of financial services, though, I think the big game with TPP really is the access it's going to give large American financial services into places like China. And, you know, China, for example, won't be able to limit the size of too big to fail banks, or it won't be able to say, no, you've got to keep a firewall.
But China's not part of the TPP.
Or, any of the other, that's right, China has a spine, actually, in this regard, but any of those other Asian companies won't be able to regulate their financial markets.
Very true. As a matter of fact, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, that there's a specific fear in Japan that the American insurance companies, health insurance companies, are going to come in and they're going to focus on the high profit sectors. And right now, Japan's insurance markets depend on the low-risk and high-risk people all being melded into the same pot to offset the costs. And if America, they're worried that if American insurance companies move in, that they're only going to go after the high profitability, which of course is the low-risk pool, and then the high-risk pool, the costs associated with it, there's no place for it to get offset, and they're going to end up having the government's going to have to shell out a ton more money. So yeah, I mean it's a what did I call it the other day, a nightmare wrapped in a horror story. I mean, yeah, the TPP is bad juju.
Yeah.
No doubt.
There's a good website I'm aware of called citizenstrade.org, just for any of the other listeners.
Citizens, okay.
Good stuff out there.
Yeah, and I'm really mad at myself that I did not bookmark the site where they actually published the list of the participants, the 600 companies that are participating in the negotiation, just so that you could read the who. That's a Fortune 500. Just get out your Fortune 500. That's pretty much it. You know.
Yeah.
So Dave, I appreciate the call, and please call anytime. It was a great call, great input.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure. So that was Dave from Erie, Pennsylvania. So this is great. We've had a couple of new callers. We've had a great time so far. We've got 40 more minutes we can play with here. But I wanted to take a pause for the cause. I'm a little bit late doing that. It's supposed to be at the top of the hour. Just to remind everybody that Press One for Democracy is not the only Coffee Party radio show. There are four of them. This one airs every Monday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Then tomorrow we have Eric Beiler and a host of guest hosts over the next couple of months, I'm sure, on the Middle Ground, and that starts at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And on Thursdays we have Lunch with Loudon at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Of course, it's called Lunch with Loudon because over here on our side of the world, it's noon. So you can have lunch with Jeanine Loudon, an extremely engaging and super intelligent woman, who also happens to be the executive director of the Coffee Party. And then on Saturday, we have Egberto Willis. He does Politics Done Right. Egberto is I guess we can call him president of the Coffee Party Progressives. But he is absolutely excellent at carrying on Coffee Party-like conversations, which means you could be as far to the right as he is to the left. He will engage you in an intelligent and a civil conversation, and he'll always be looking for that middle ground. So that's at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Saturday. So with that, we also have a special segment that we've started here, and it's called The Civics Minute with John Cashin. So let's roll The Civics Minute.
Hello everyone, this is John Cashin with the Coffee Party USA's Civics Minute. It is a time for the muckrakers to return. In the early 20th century, writers, photographers, and journalists stepped up to expose the injustices of their day. Back then, anything could be done to make a profit at the expense of the workers and the consumers. Among some of the practices were farmers being charged unfair rates by the railroad industry to move their produce, packing industries that didn't concern themselves with health and safety issues, and deplorable working conditions were being placed upon the workers at many factories, including the children that were also working as laborers.
At the same time, there were many local, state, and federal elected leaders that were profiting by allying themselves with these industries at the expense of the public. Theodore Roosevelt used the term muckraker when he delivered his The Man with the Muckrake speech on April 15, 1906 in Washington, D.C. He stated, "In Pilgrim's Progress, The Man with the Muckrake is set forth as an example of him whose vision is fixed on carnal instead of spiritual things. Yet he also typifies the man who in this life consistently refuses to see the aught that is lofty and fixes his eyes with solemn intentness on that which is vile and debasing. Now it is very necessary that we should not flinch from seeing what is vile and debasing. There is filth on the floor, and it must be scraped up with a muckrake. And there are times and places where this service is the most needed of all the services that can be performed. Today, a muckraker has become known as someone that searches out and publicly exposes real or apparent misconduct of a prominent individual or business. But this kind of reporting has been playing second fiddle to the sensational 24/7 style of reporting being employed by the cable networks today. Tactics that strive to get the most profit at the expense of everyone else hasn't disappeared. And with today's social media and the ability of everyone to be citizen journalists, the need for the muckraker to expose these practices is more important than ever, so they can be held in check once and for all." Stay tuned for more Civics Minute segments as you listen to your favorite Coffee Party USA Blog Talk radio shows. From Paducah, Kentucky, this is John Cashin. Good day, everyone.
That's John Cashin, our very own, also a member of the board of directors. And John is a brilliant guy, a true Southern gentleman, if there ever was one. I mean, if I've ever, I don't think I've ever met a true Southern gentleman, and John Cashin is it. He embodies all the goodness of what the South was as far as manners is concerned and mannerisms. And he's just a great guy to be around, and he's a brilliant historian. You could probably go toe to toe with Bobby on a lot of this stuff. So great guy. And yeah, and he's right. Boy, do we need the muckrakers. Where are the Woodwards and Bernsteins? Where are the people that are actually trying to crack the news stories and expose Washington for what it is? Well, we know in the 1% media why they don't do it. It's because their bosses don't want them to do it, because their bosses are buying Washington influence, and certainly they don't want everybody to know that. So obviously the 1% media is no longer the place where we can expect those kinds of behaviors. And so, as John said, we have to all be the media. We have to get on social network. We have to call on the radio shows. We have to publish blogs, and we have to let the world know that, you know, there's bad things going on and that we need to organize against it. So with that, let me remind you that this is Dan Aronson. This is Press One for Democracy. And if you'd like to call in and get on the conversation tonight, the number is 646-929-2495. It is a call-in show, and that's what we need. We need audience participation. Tonight we're talking about GOPOTUS, and again, that was a little unclear to some people, and I don't blame them. It was my attempt at being clever, but basically it was the GOP, the Republicans, and POTUS. So has President Obama gone to the other side of the aisle? Obviously, that's metaphorical, but we were talking about his impending nomination of Larry Summers as Fed chair, and as well as the Trans-Pacific Partnership, albeit there are plenty more issues where that came from, where the president seemingly had run on the platform with espousing certain things and has seemingly done a little backslide or a reversal of position. Again, I do not fault the president for everything. He obviously has a Congress that doesn't want to let him do a whole lot, but I just wish he'd stand up a little bit more to them, go toe-to-toe, stand on principle, throw a veto down every once in a while, and you know, and establish his power base, if you will, over that of the obstinate Congress. So, again, I see it. We'll bring in Robert. I'll open your mic, as well as Greg. So,
let me chime in.
All right, Greg, I had him muted for like 10 minutes. Boy, he couldn't wait, could he?
He's like a tiger in a cage.
Anytime, you know darn well, anytime you want to start your own show, we are ready to sign you on, man. You're good to go.
He can talk for 2 hours, I bet.
yeah. All right.
Everybody,
testify, yeah. Brother Robert.
So, Amber Lyon, CNN whistleblower, Emmy Award-winning journalist, a prominent member of Free and Equal Elections Foundation, and is a participant in the United We Stand Fest that you heard me talk about, happened to have started a news website called muckraker.com.
Well, there
and
you
I
go.
Think everybody needs to pull that right up. Because she's doing exactly what Mr. Cashin told us we need to do. And I had to throw that in there before we moved on to something else.
Well, no, I appreciate that. Muckraker.com. And her name was what?
Amber Lyon. Look her up. She's an Emmy Award-winning journalist. She's from CNN. She's a CNN whistleblower. She is one of the speakers at the United We Stand Fest. She is an alternative news source. Very credible. One of the few journalists that I'll listen to and not question her facts. She is more interested in facts than she is in giving her opinion to us, which is also something that's a lost art. Matter of fact, I was having some discussions recently with Dan Johnson of the NDAA about Ben Swan's full disclosure, who's another journalist who I find extremely credible and is part of the alternative news sources that are out there, and I was wondering why he was offering his opinion before I was getting the fact, and apparently he wasn't the one that was writing it. So, we've lost the journalism art, and these are two people that are doing it, and so is Abby Martin too. I'll give her a lot of credit as well, speaking plainly, talking facts, leaving the opinions out of it for the most part, and letting us do what we're supposed to do, listen to the facts and figure it out for ourselves or look into it further. And, you know, remember when we were all growing up, op-eds were all about the last page of the newspaper. The facts all were before that. Now that's all we get is op-eds.
Right. Agreed. Well, thank you for bringing that to our attention. And as a matter of fact, I'll tell you what. Why don't you go ahead? I'm going to give you a 3-minute segment. Why don't you go ahead and, if you can, in 3 minutes, tell us about the United We Stand Festival, because I think that's a very worthwhile event that's going on, and people should know about it. So there you go.
Well, I appreciate that. On October 12th at Pauley Pavilion at UCLA. The Free and Equal Elections Foundation is putting on the United We Stand Fest. Free and Equal Elections Foundation is founded by Christina Tobin, who's been on this show. And the purpose of Free and Equal Elections Foundation is to break up the two-party duopoly in Washington, to inspire candidates to run for office, to inspire people to run for office, with principle, no matter what party, no matter what ideology, just people of principle, you know, money out of politics, and to expand the ability for the American public to vote. We essentially want to make it so you can vote on your iPhone, basically, just like you can do your banking on your iPhone. We want people to be able to vote as easy as possible so we can clean up that 57% that Greg was talking about earlier, which is absolutely true. We want all those other people to be involved, and we want to make it easy for them to do it, and we want to give people real choices. So the United We Stand Fest is going to be about that, and it's going to be there's going to be musical guests there. It's going to be a concert, Ziggy Marley and Public Enemy and Nas and Lupe Fiasco and Saving Abel, one of the great rock bands. There's a lot of people who are still working out some details to come in. We have speakers from across the paradigm: Jesse Ventura, Gary Johnson, who ran for president last year in the Libertarian Party, Jill Stein, who ran for president last year on the Green Party. Cindy Sheehan is going to be there. Amber Lyon, Ben Swan, Dan Johnson from People Against the NDAA is a speaker there, also a sponsor for the event. We rejected Coca-Cola and Pepsi for being involved in the event. We don't want anything to do with them. We don't want anything to do with anybody who's GMO. We don't want any Monsanto. It is a true, I guess you could call it a liberty-based event. And it is freeandequal.org and unitedwestandfest.com. And again, it's October 12th in Los Angeles, and it's the beginning of a 10-city tour around the country. And what we're going to do is we're going to ask the colleges of the country to vote on where they want the 10 cities to be, and the winning 10 cities is where we're going to go, and we're going to do the same event in each one of those cities in the spring of 2014 during the midterm election. And we're going to have debates everywhere, just like we did the three-party elections. And it is, Free and Equal is an established, large entity, and the presidential debate that it hosted last year was moderated by Larry King, and it was seen by 20 million people. And the Justice Party, Rocky Anderson, who would be my preference, Gary Johnson, who Libertarian Party, we had the Constitutional Party, and we had the Green Party with Gene Steele Stein. We had plenty of alternative media that was there. President Obama and Governor Romney were invited to participate. And we're just going to keep pushing the dynamic that people need to be able to vote for the people that they want, and everybody should be allowed to go on the ballot.
All right, well, hold on. So first of all, you well exceeded your 3 minutes. Greg was right. but I want to ask you, you know, as we seem to have exhausted our original topic, let's go down this rabbit trail, if you will. I don't think it's a rabbit hole. I like to call it a rabbit trail because I think there could be something good at the end. So riddle me this. You've got between the Libertarians and the Constitution Party and the Green Party, they pulled just over, I think it was 1.4% of the votes.
That's correct.
Okay? So, is it A, knowledge, or B, a general change in the way we elect, well, I just call it the president for starters. Actually, let's not do that because I don't want to go down that because that leads us to the Electoral College. Forget that. Let's just talk Congress. How do we get this monkey off our back that is, oh, you vote for a third party, it's a waste of your vote?
Well, it has a lot to do with the stranglehold that the corporations have on this process as well. Now, if you remember, if you go even back to Ross Perot, which is really the last person that's been allowed into the process, you no longer have, if you just look at the debates, for example, you no longer have access to the debates like you used to. Remember, they used to be held by the National Organization of Women, for example, when they were going to invite anybody that was on the ballot. Ralph Nader has been, Christina put Ralph Nader on 45 state ballot herself, for example. You know, and it's unfortunate they have to do that. It's basically the way that the corporation with the debates have. The debates that were held last year were run by a corporate entity. The questions that were given were reviewed by the participants, the president and the governor. It was not a true debate, and they did not let anybody else play. They owned it. It is not even it's not like the town hall debate is owned by the corporation.
Yeah, okay. But, all right, and I don't expect you to memorize the Nielsen rating. How many people watch the debates? It can't be just the debates.
Oh, if 20 million people watch the third party debates, I'd have to say that at least triple watch the others. And considering where we were in this country and what's going on, how polarized they came out of the primaries, because the primaries were ridiculously polarized. Up and down, all over the place, they pretty much gave everybody that was in the primaries a chance to be a lead person, so it extended the argument. Our election cycle is forever. But the point about bringing the corporation stranglehold on is that you can't get in to educate the public on other views. That's the problem. So
okay,
what
but,
you have
but,
to do is go back to the people and make them knock the door down.
public financing solves a lot of that problem.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You take the money, you take the big corporate donors out, you take the big black dark money out, you make elections financed on an equal playing field, and suddenly I think you see credible
changes everything.
And even fourth parties, like you just said too, being able to legitimately participate in the public debate, suddenly able to get
absolutely.
More than 1 or 2% of the vote. It's the money that controls the message.
Do you remember we were talking about this subject a couple of weeks ago, and I had mentioned that Alabama had just, a law in Alabama had just started this month, and where they're allowing corporations to put campaign contributions to anybody they want at any limit that they want? That's the kind of stuff that's going on. In the meantime, in Arkansas, they have an amendment going on, and Greg, you were part of that show, where Greg Dickelman was on from Arkansas, and he was talking to us about, remember that? Now, and so there's an amendment going on now, so there is a way, and if that thing gets passed, that is a beacon to the whole coffee party movement about getting money out of politics. If corporate personhood and money out of politics is solved, then it's open season for anybody to run that is eligible and that can be supported by society, and everybody's got a chance, and we break that up. And if if they pass that amendment, that's a big deal.
I think Montana's fighting right now with the Federal Election Commission about not having to allow for the finances of state elections there to be done through super PACs, aren't they? Isn't there something going on there with Montana?
Well, yeah, but remember, the problem with the Montana law, which is what Arkansas had solved, was Montana had federal elections in the process, which stepped into the Citizens United Authority,
right. Right.
Where Arkansas left the federal elections alone and only dealt with the state, which is why they feel that amendment's going to pass. And, of course, they're expecting, big corporate money to come rolling in before that vote happens, like they always do,
right.
Try and fight it. But that's what the deal is with Montana. Montana wants to do the same thing, but they didn't do it right. As far as that federal overlap goes.
And I also think it's worth noting about Montana, what my favorite takeaway from the Montana thing is that it's being led by Republicans.
Right. Right.
I mean, so for all people that think that they can actually paint in such broad brush strokes and say all Republicans this or all Democrats this or all, anybody, they're just wrong. So.
If you are a principal candidate, and this is why I have issues with, like if I had a negative thing to say about Ron Paul, is that the way he got treated with it by the Republicans at the convention show that he should have never ran because it didn't do him any good. He should have never ran as a Republican. If you're a principal candidate, you should have access to run. And if you're a principal Republican or Democratic candidate, you should be against something that's going to stop you from being able to do it. There was a poll recently, not a poll, a discussion recently on how both parties stay away from running against incumbents, either on the primary level or against them, because the incumbents pretty much have it locked in, and they're just going to let it keep going. Like the Republican Party is not going to, either party is not going to support a challenge to an incumbent. Well, what's that about? You have to have a principled situation. If you look at the voting records, for example, of everybody, that pretty much will tell you whether or not you want to support them as a citizen. So you should be able to go and find somebody that doesn't do these votes the way you want to do them. I don't care what your ideology is, if we're going to do honest elections. And there's no two-party system listed in the Constitution. So they have created something and it really, the last 30 years is how we became apathetic to it. When I say apathy, I don't think that we're as apathetic this year or now as we were in the last 30 years, let's say. But we've allowed this to develop, and they've created such a stranglehold that it does seem like we're banging our head against the wall. But damn it, what else are we supposed to do? We're supposed to continue to be apathetic about it? No. You've got to fight it. And you've got to hope that it changes. Otherwise, you're basically laying down, and we could all think of wonderful comments to go after that. So we need to do something about it. We need to keep struggling about it. And Free and Equal, for example, is one of the leading organizations that is doing something about it. I'm happy to be a part of it. just like I'm happy to be a part of the coffee party. I totally believe that this is where we need, what we need to be doing is we have to keep pounding at the door.
Fair enough. Greg?
I couldn't agree more. It's one of the reasons why I have tweets scheduled to run until the end of September about the Anti-Corruption Act. It's something that I feel pretty strongly as a pathway to actually affecting the kind of change that we're all talking about, and that is to take the money out of the electoral process, and to do it in such a way that it won't violate contradict Citizens United, can't be challenged by the Supreme Court, and really gives us an opportunity to have a more fair and equal voice in what's happening in federal elections.
Well, let me
can't
tell
stay
you.
Stay quiet.
Let me tell you, it's very, very interesting you brought that up, because today I had an hour long call with Josh Silver, who is the head represent us, the sponsors and creators of the Anti-Corruption Act, and we talked about ways that the coffee party could work in conjunction with represent us on that project and their 435 project, which is much like our 535 project. So we had a very great call. It was very interesting, very compelling guy. And I would look forward. I mean, Wednesday's a board meeting, so I'm looking forward to bringing that up and seeing how we can't get on board that train, because I think it's a pretty good one.
You know, if you go to the website, Dan, and you reminded me of something else about Free and Equal too. We also have a similar 535, 435 project, to where we have an accountability. If you look at our platform, you'll see we have six different items, and one of them is to give a database for people to go to find out exactly what their elected officials are doing. It's part of the process. So we're all on the same page about educating our public and letting them choose the way they need to choose. Not telling them what to do, it's telling them here's the information, instead of this bogus, you know, presentation that we get from the 1% media.
Nope, that's excellent. Maybe there's some room for multiple collaborations, because I guess it would be really good if we could centralize it, but I also know there's always worry about, you know, oh, you're co-opting my idea or whatnot. So either way, as long as the information gets out there, that's the most important thing as far as I'm concerned. So,
and we're pretty equal the same way. We don't care about co-opting. We're not interested in any of that. We're interested in bringing people together. We don't care about the ideology. We care about the information, and we care about society, and we care about the Constitution, and we just want everybody to be heard and everybody to have access to the information. So, you know, collaboration is what it's all about, and of course, you know, that's why I had Christina on when I was hosting for you, and that's why I had Dan Johnson on when I was hosting for you, because they have important things to say that the Coffee Party membership needs to know about, and Coffee Party is being invited to occupy Little Rock Radio, for example, which is going to be something that I got to give to you for support. And as you know, I've invited you to United States Fan Fest, and I invited Janine as well. There has to do it. Everybody has to be involved in everybody, as long as it's people of good conscience doing the right thing.
Yep, the only thing we have to fear is the indifference of good men, from
Absolutely.
One of my favorite all-time movies, The Boondock Saints. final thoughts, gentlemen. Mr. Rodrigo.
I've already overstepped my 3 minutes. You're good.
Okay, thanks. Thank you, Mr. Roberts. And Mr. Greg, any final thoughts?
Always entertaining, always engaging, always informative. I look forward to Monday nights. Keep it going, Dan.
All right. The check is in the mail, sir. You got it. All right, this is Dan Aronson. You've been listening to Press One for Democracy. Thank you for joining us tonight, or if you're listening on a rebroadcast, thank you for spending the hour hour and three quarters with us. I think we had some really good conversation around the president and what he's doing and some of the moves he's making as being somewhat less than or different from what we all expected, and maybe not really good ones. So I think it was a great conversation. The good news, if there is any, is as Steve Mance, who's he moderates our national organizers page. Steve Mance pointed out is that what we are talking about, at least with the TPP and the upcoming Fed chair nomination, is that they are future events. And who knows? Maybe the president is sandbagging everybody and saying what everybody wants him to say, and then he'll come up and he'll surprise us with something in the end. So they are future events, and they can be changed. And what that means is, as Bobby said, we've got to be active, we've got to be out there, we've got to be educated, and we've got to talk to people. And we got to have civil conversations and respectful conversations with people who don't agree with us. If we all mill around in our own little groups where everybody's agreeing and then just, you know, stare across the room at the other guys and say, oh, they're the enemy and we're not going to talk to them, then we're never going to get anywhere in this country, a country that is more divided now than it's ever been. And if ever there was a time that we need to come together, now is it. And I hold out hope, and I hold out hope that the Coffee Party is going to be a part of that, bringing the country together and healing the country so that we can start all doing better. So with that, I will tell you that the Coffee Party is member-driven, and we don't have any super PACs or angels throwing tens of thousands of dollars at us. So we get by on membership and donations from our members. So you can go to Coffee Party USA. And you can either become a member, or you can donate to the Free the Elected. If you donate to the Free the Elected campaign, I think you're still getting the matching donations. It'll match your donation with a restaurant.com certificate. I'm pretty sure that's still in effect. I apologize if it's not in advance, but please go either way if you like what we're doing. And join us next Monday on Press One for Democracy, and as well as Tuesday for The Middle Ground, Thursday for Lunch with Loudon, and finally Saturday for Egberto Willis and Politics Done Right. This has been Dan Aronson, still is, saying good evening from Portland, Oregon, and I wish you well.